but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the Pack West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
Damian Martinez, the running back. DJ Uiagalelei at quarterback. And the Clemson transfer.
Damian Martinez, fantastic last season. I don't know about you, but I kind of assigned a little bit of hope for the system. Not just for Oregon State, when I heard Damian Martinez was coming back for another year. Angie Machado, Beaver Blitz, does a fantastic job. They had the story. Damian Martinez apparently telling his coaches he's getting in the transfer portal. We'll find out more about that from Angie. What does it mean? What does Oregon State do? I have a lot of questions for Angie, and she's joining us now. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I was disappointed. I get disappointed every time I see a player go into a portal. A little part of me dies, Angie, and there I don't know how much I have left. So
especially when they tell you 2 months ago, or 2 weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago, that they're so loyal and they just love Oregon State. Yeah, I mean, it a little piece of you dies, isn't it?
Give me an idea of what you think changed for Damian Martinez.
You know, I started hearing rumblings about this on Saturday night that this could be potentially happening, and then it kind of squelled. I mean, I heard yesterday, no, it was good, and then this morning, my phone blew up. So, I honestly, Pete Thamel reports that he was being offered $400,000 to stay at Oregon State via NIL, which is, you know, it's not chump change there. So, you know, I don't know if it's a money issue. I don't know until Damian speaks. It's, you know, but at the end of the day, this whole transfer portal, you look at Bear Alexander at USC, that's a seventh transfer for this kid. So the portal's a disaster, I think, for college football. The NIL, to some extent, I think it has more to do with exposure and probably getting closer to home, you know, down in the South.
The Oregon State coaching staff, where do they pivot? What's the depth at that position like? Or do they go out and try to find someone in the portal?
No, I mean, honestly, if you're going to lose a player, running back was the deepest, you know, group in the room. So honestly, I've seen some great things from Anthony Hankerson, the new running back from Colorado. I actually had him kind of penciled in as right now, you know, 2 weeks into spring camp as the number two running back behind Damian. Jam Griffin's back after being at Oregon State, you know, it was Georgia Tech, Oregon State, Ole Miss, and now back at Oregon State. He gives Oregon State some of that, you know, pass catching. You know, that's one thing I think Damian, you know, this in this new offense, I think they're expecting the running backs to be able to catch the ball out of the backfield. And, I mean, I saw them working on it, you know, a couple practices where the quarterbacks and running backs go into Truax, and that was what they're working on. If Damian had a Achilles heel that we've seen over the past few years, it was, you know, catching the ball out of the backfield. So, you know, I don't know if he just wasn't thrilled with the new offense, you know, what it entails. But at the end of the day, wherever he goes, he's going to have to learn new terminology, new offense, new wrinkles. So it's going to be interesting.
I have him penciled in at Michigan State. Am I wrong to do that?
Yeah, I don't see that. I don't know. I think he would have gone if that was going to be the destination. So, but who knows? It's funny because, you know, even my own husband was like, well, where's he going to go? I'm like, you know, honestly, I cover Oregon State. He's gone. I mean, he's not in the portal yet. Portal doesn't open until Tuesday of next week. So, I guess some things could happen. He could change his mind but I don't think you scrub your social media and take off all, you know, links of Oregon State football and add your agent, you know, to your bio link if you're not serious.
He just posted on Instagram, Onward and Upward, and he posted, you know, Damian Martinez gets into the portal. So it sounds like he's announcing it himself as well now. What was the reaction from fans? Because I think people come to expect it, but I also think it's disappointing when, like you said, you hear from a guy that, hey, I'm all in. Grass isn't greener. We heard that in women's basketball. And then, you know, the grass is greener, apparently. But how did the fans react to Damian?
There's a lot of, just upset fans. I think Beaver fans especially have just been, it's kind of gut punch after gut punch. So there's, not only the whole Pac-12 dissolution and, Coach Smith leaving, and then, some of the players that left and followed or went to, elsewhere. Then you kind of feel like, okay, there's some good stuff going on. Baseball is a top five team. Women's basketball, Elite Eight. There's some, positive stuff. And then you have women's basketball people. After you think women's basketball could be on the come up next year, then you have got, some of those women leaving and then Damian. So it just kind of feels like there's a lot of gut punches. But, that's kind of where we're at. I don't think any school or program is really immune to that right now. You could take a snapshot across the country, and I think fans everywhere would maybe say they're losing people that they didn't expect, or maybe not quite as bad as Oregon State's having it right now, but it's an issue everywhere. Kind of this musical chairs issue that the portal has given.
Early grades for Trent Bray. What are you seeing in spring ball, and how are you feeling about it?
I love the energy. You watch him coach, and you watch the staff. I think he assembled a good staff. I'm excited to see them on the recruiting trail because I think this staff is made up of a lot of really good recruiters. And so to see what they can do, without trying, they basically were assembled together and tried to cobble together something in a month or two, even a couple weeks before that December signing period. So give them a year. I like that. Quarterback to me is still a kind of a mystery. And that's where I'd like to see more growth. So, it's going to be interesting to watch, especially Coach Gunderson in his first offensive coordinator position and Coach Bray as a first-time head coach. I think defense is going to be fine, but offensively I'm anxious to see that because I haven't honestly seen what I want to see from Javonte McCoy. As far as the Idaho transfer, Jabari Johnson has been sidelined he's been wearing a boot. He's been coming since April, since spring break, he has been participating. So whether he gets up to speed, I just haven't seen strong play from quarterbacks yet. So that is going to be kind of what I'm watching this last half of spring ball.
Beaver Blitz, Angie Machado with us. Normally when there's a regime change, there is a wide berth that is given to a coaching staff. But I don't know that Oregon State can afford that in the position they're in, playing the schedule they're playing this next season. What in your mind is a successful year one for Trent Bray?
If they have to, honestly, they have to win 9 or 10 games, if not more. It's not going to be an easy schedule, but I do think you talk to the coaches and they feel that there is a path, to win, 11, 12 games. I think a 9 to 10 win season, it's got to be what they're shooting for. Now, is that possible with all the change, you start looking at that back when you had Easton Mascarenhas and Achille Arnold and, Aiden Childs hadn't left yet. You had Damian Martinez. So, like I said, running back to me, though, it's kind of plug and play. There's a couple of freshmen that will be coming in August, and we've seen true freshmen do really good things at Oregon State and elsewhere. So that's not maybe my biggest concern, but I do think Oregon State needs to win, 9, 10 games to stay in that relevant picture. And that's what we've heard, the administrators say they want them to see, you have to be relevant. You have to stay relevant for this 2-year period. Well, it's the Pac-2. I think that's kind of the basement. And I know people will laugh and roll their eyes at Oregon State, but I think that's where they have to be is winning a good chunk of games.
The media day is going to be interesting. And the Mountain West is holding their media day in Las Vegas. I am told Oregon State and Washington State want to do their own thing. They're talking about it now. Here's my idea, Angie. You tell me if this is good. This conference started in downtown Portland 108 years ago. Hold the damn media day in downtown Portland. People, the media from Seattle and Pullman will come. The media from all over the state of Oregon will come. sort of celebrate the rebirth of the conference. I pitched that to Teresa Gold today. I think she politely gave me, hey, that's a great idea. I don't know if they'll take it, but what do you think they should do for Media Day?
I actually like it, John. I mean, heck, that's super easy for us too. But I would not like to see. I mean, I don't want to see them try to partner up with Mountain West. I mean, they have to keep that distance, whatever they do. I mean, there's too many people in the national side of things that already are kind of saying, "Oh, Oregon State," you know, they're basically playing a Mountain West schedule. Keep your distance. I like the Portland idea because, like you said, that's where the old pack was formed. So I like it. I'll go on social media and pitch that too. I'll say John Canzano said.
Yeah, and I think it would be like they could even go to the original hotel where the meeting, you know, it's changed names since and been renovated.
Which one was it? Was it the Benson or the Governor?
It was, I'll have it in just a second. And because I ended up going down there and writing about it, and the original formation of that was, let me look at this thing. It was the PCC, and it was 108 years ago. Let me just see where this meeting was held.
And you could build that up. I mean, the history and a new dawn, but the history remains. I like it.
It was the Imperial Hotel, which is now the Hotel Lucia.
And oh, it's in okay.
Down, yeah,
that.
Downtown. So, yeah. And
across
so,
from where the old Oregon State Foundation office was.
There you go. And so I told Teresa, I said, hey, hold your media day there. She said, love this idea. We have a group talking about it. I'll pass it along, which means just shut up, John. Like, we
exactly,
we know what we're doing.
Exactly. Stay in your lane. Stay in your lane.
But here's the thing. You're right. You can't hold it in Vegas because then you're just affirming everybody who says you're Mountain West Conference member. And I don't think if you hold it in L.A. or something, I don't think everybody's going to go just for two teams. So I think...
And they're Northwest teams. Like, nobody goes to L.A. I mean, the L.A. market's not going to care that Washington State and Oregon State's down there.
So you got to go Portland, I think. And you get the Pullman, the Spokane, the Seattle media. You get all the media in Oregon. It's a big, like, hey, let's celebrate 108 years here and keep it separate. So I like that. All right, here's the other thing. Feels like the TV partner for these two entities is going to be the CW. There's nothing official yet, but that's the direction they are moving, it looks like. Wide distribution, probably not a lot of money, but it'll be on linear TV and available everywhere. Is that a good move for Oregon State and Washington State if that's the way it shakes out?
I think it's huge. I love it, honestly. I mean, to me, it makes more sense than, you know, the bottom of the Big 12 is on, like, ESPN Plus and, you know, some of the streaming. So get it on linear TV. I love it. I mean, I've watched live golf tournaments on CW.
Yes.
I mean, it's not the most glamorous, not the most money, but right now Oregon State and Washington State need eyeballs. And so to get eyeballs across the country watching some good football, I like it.
And you're right about that. And also the CW does not have a production arm. And so Pac-12 Networks gets to produce the games as they always did. And I think there's some interest there in maybe partnering with the CW on some other sporting events that they could pick up side hustle work on. What else does Oregon State need to do? Let's talk about the marketing and branding. And this is not in their DNA. You know that. To go out and crow from the mountaintops their story and tell it to the nation, what change of thinking needs to happen at Oregon State?
Well, they need to market. I mean, they need to actually, I just don't feel like Oregon State has ever been good at branding. They try to tell their story, but it's always kind of the, you know, we do things the right way. And I mean, we've heard Scott Barnes kind of say his shtick about, you know, the Beaver way and all that. No, we got to, you know, they have to talk about, not only is it a great university, but the history of athletics. I honestly, I'd like to see them invest. And I know they have no money really to invest, right? But, you know, it goes back to really putting that investment in football. And that at the end of the day is going to pay all the bills. So they need to make sure that football is being marketed. It is being sold the story and play up the Coach Bray, Coach Gunderson, Coach Hayward, Coach Devan, you know, Coach Canham, Coach Ruick, play that up. They're alums. But, you know, that soundbite from Coach Ruick at the Elite Eight at the post game where he talked about, you know, being a Beave and his mom was a Beave. And who knows what happens with Coach Ruick down the road and, you know, if he, what's going on there. But that soundbite right there, it speaks volumes to what Oregon State is. And it's a lot more than, you know, just an engineering school or an ag school or, you know, the school down the road from Oregon. Because, you know, Oregon hasn't been, if you go back even, 30 years, Oregon football was nothing to be too excited about. So I just think they have to kind of build upon that family and go from there.
Angie Machado, Beaver Blitz, with us. Angie, Wayne Tinkle, $8.7 million left on his contract, probably saved him this year. What does he need to do? Is there anything he can do? He will be playing a WCC schedule, so seemingly the competition will be a little softer for him, but that program has no trajectory right now.
None. I mean, in my opinion, Scott Barnes really messed that up by signing him to that deal. Yes, they came off the Elite Eight, but it was after COVID. That's a rough one because you don't have the money to buy him out. And now we're to the point, John, where he has 3 years left on that deal, but he has 8 open scholarships. And I love Wayne Tinkle. I think he's a great person. But what does that sell look like? After you've just told your AD, I'm going to go out and get, you know, Jordan Pope and Bilodeau, and we're going to build this team around these young guys. And now they all leave. So now what's your pitch on the recruiting trail? You know you're a lame duck coach. You have to win some games, but who are you going to do it with? To me, it's a complete dumpster fire, but that's why we're going to focus on football and baseball right now.
Right. Do you think football, the fan enthusiasm come August, come September, Research Stadium, even though it will be a different opponent in the stadium most weeks, except the Oregon game, maybe Purdue will be some buzz there, but do you think the fans will show up, will get excited about this team this season and put all that other stuff behind them?
I do. I think in the short term right now, there's some fans that are kind of checking out just with all the change and with all the transfer portal. But like I said, that's everywhere. College football is changing. Who knows what it's going to look like in a year or even 2 or 3 years from now. But I do. I think there's still that excitement. You know, the students are going to show up. There's some great games. I mean, Corvallis in September, in early October is magnificent, usually with good weather. And so you're going to get the student section. They'll be rowdy. And I do think, you know, Beaver Nation, like I said, I talk about selling that family atmosphere, but they're also very loyal. So I think they'll give it a shot. Now, if things don't go as hoped this year, I think it could get to be a tougher sell. But I think it might not be sellout after sellout, but there's some compelling games there. Like I said, Oregon, there's, you know, Washington State later in the season. And, you know, you have a couple road games that are pretty, pretty compelling too, with Boise State, you know, Air Force. There's some good ones there.
Yeah. Look, Oregon State, Washington State have had some wins in the courtroom. They've had some wins financially. The NCAA tournament revenue is going to be great for them. The settlement money is great. But I think come football season, they're going to need, like you said, I mean, I just don't think there's much of a margin there for Trent Bray. He's got to win.
No.
Because, you know, part of that is, I mean, I don't think people say you have to win the Oregon game, but you got to win 9 or 10 and
yeah.
Prove that you at least belong at the top of the Mountain West Conference and are making a case, even in a year where you're replacing a coach, that you still belong in the Power Four.
Exactly. I mean, I think there has not been a more crucial year, you know, for Oregon State and Washington State. But, you know, as covering Oregon State, that's, you know, where my focus is. There has to be, I mean, that, like you said, margin of error is so slim, because if let's say they just win 7 or 8, how quickly, you know, they'll be forgotten on the national stage. And so you need to keep the pressure on the big time TV. I mean, that's who's running the show right now. So keep some pressure there, because other sports are winning. I would make an argument Oregon State belongs in a major division, major conference, based on when the whole body of work of the athletic department. But right now it's football. So Oregon State has had a couple really good, pretty solid seasons in football. But you play a Mountain West Conference schedule and win 7 or 8 games, it's not going to get it done.
Angie Machado, Beaver Blitz. Thank you. I will catch up to you. I appreciate you.
Absolutely. Thank you, John.
Anytime. There she is. She's great on Oregon State. There's the news. You have the confirmation. Damian Martinez is in the portal. I want your reaction to that. 503-417-7575. Also, what does Oregon State and Washington State need to do? Is it all about on-the-field results, or can there be a marketing push? What do athletes care about? We'll kick it around. Anna will pop in the studio. Later in the show, we've got some Punch It audio coming up, the 5 at 5. I want you here.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
I've gotten to talk a lot about great teams for a lot of years, and most, more importantly, great people, a lot of years. And this team is, it rivals any team I've ever been a part of. What they did this year is not common. It's not normal. We're not supposed to be here, but we are. And the people in the room get it. Not surprised by it. And you all got to see it today. A fearless, gritty, tough display of competitive fire and passion and togetherness that is as inspiring as anything. What's more inspiring than what you all just watched? And those of you who have been paying attention, which is not most of you, you know, all year long, you would know that from day one. If you were with us in Italy, you would have seen what you saw today. Passion, unbelievable energy, togetherness, and a competitive fire that's just not normal. And so down 12 going into the fourth quarter. So, you know, that's all I had to say. We're down 12 to the number one team starting the fourth quarter. Let's go. Can we do it? You know, and so just fearless, courageous, together, everything that's right. Is this team. In our sport, where it seems like controversy is the flavor all the time for some reason, and we all have to have something to whine about, this team just keeps it simple and does everything right. And y'all are probably bored with it. Shame on you, is what I'd say. Everybody needs to get to know this team. Everybody needs to watch this team. And everybody needs to be like this team. The world would be better if everyone focused on this instead of a lot of the other things. And so I couldn't be more proud of a group, more happy to be a part of them, and more grateful.
Scott Ruick, Oregon State women's basketball coach, speaking to media on his way out of the NCAA tournament. He has now lost two players in the transfer portal. I am told by a source that, you know, Talia von Olhoffen and Tamia Gardner, the two players in the portal, informed Scott Ruick that they were getting in the portal the day after the season ended. When, you know, when he should have been celebrating and out going, hey, where can I start recruiting? He's getting informed by to his players that they're getting in the portal. They didn't officially get in the portal until days later. Of course, Tamia Gardner was yesterday where she tweeted that out. Anna's in the studio. We're now watching Damian Martinez in the transfer portal. This was a guy who said he was all in, said he was staying. Apparently, he is turning down $400,000 that Oregon State offered him to stay at Oregon State, and he is getting in the portal, going somewhere else. That's a big blow. It's another big blow, and it seems like it's blow after blow after blow for Oregon State.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. I mean, this is, I kind of think we had talked about the possibility of these things happening, things just starting to cave in, as, you know, there's just so much uncertainty for Oregon State and the path that lies ahead for them. I can imagine that the players are feeling that and the coaches, and it's kind of like, what are people supposed to do? Like, Damian Martinez, how much is he getting potentially somewhere else if $400,000 was not enough to keep him? Or was it not even about the money? Was it simply about the uncertainty about, you know, Oregon State's future?
And, you know, I am told that the I don't want to speak for Tamia Gardner and Talia von Ohlhofen, but I am told that the primary reason that those players are leaving Oregon State has to do more with the level of competition that they'll play next year, the exposure that they'll get next year. They want to play the best. And, you know, I'll wait and let them speak for themselves, but that's what I am told. And with Damian Martinez, I don't know what he's thinking, and I don't know if he's thinking or if someone is telling him, hey, get in the portal, you can get more than 400K. You can always go back to Oregon State. You can do no worse than that. I don't know, because I have, in the last year, heard some pretty disturbing things about handlers, agents, and promises that have been made, hollow promises. A lot of the ADs are complaining that the NIL money that agents are out there talking about isn't real. They're saying, you know, they were told, you know, you have to offer $250,000 to even get in a conversation. And they go, well, who's offering that? The agent won't say. So nobody really knows what's real and what's not. And it's created like a marketplace that has no structure to it. And, you know, when you go to buy a house, you go to buy a car, there's a process. When you do this, there's a market, there's a structure to it. And can you imagine going to make an offer on a house and somebody goes, well, to be in the conversation, you have to offer $500,000. And you go, well, what's the asking price? And they say, well, you just make your best offer. And you go, well, wait a minute. Will it appraise? You know, like, you know, there's no appraisal here. Just make your best offer and then we'll take it or we'll not take it. And nobody really knows what's going on. So I think it's disappointing, I guess, at face value, but wish the kid the best. He's not the first. He's not the last.
It's so weird to me that Pete Thamel reported that, the $400,000. I haven't heard any other number for any other player, John. And now doesn't it speak like, okay, Damian Martinez was the best player coming back to Oregon State. No question about it. So if you want anybody from Oregon State's roster, you just have to offer him $400,000. Like, they can't pay him. Like, that's their maximum payment. There's a comp on it now of what it is. Am I looking at this wrong? Like, why does Thamel pointing this out, and now isn't it just open season for anybody that wants somebody from Oregon State's roster? Like, they know exactly what they're going to have to give him.
I don't know his sourcing, but I do know that, you know, I expect Jonathan Smith and Michigan State to be in this conversation. And Angie says, no, she doesn't expect that. You know, I do think that they will be in this conversation because that's the offense he made hay in. And I want to believe, like, I want to go, hey, the reason Damian Martinez is getting in the portal is maybe he got a taste in spring ball of Ryan Gunderson's offense and he's not feeling it. And he's saying, this is not the offense that Oregon State featured all those years that had me just carrying the rock, running between the tackles. Ryan Gunderson's going to want to throw the ball. He's going to want to put him in space. Maybe Jam Griffin, who, by the way, transferred to Oregon State from South Carolina, left Oregon State for Mississippi, is back at Oregon State in the transfer portal now. Maybe he's the better back. It's still ridiculous. You know, Jam Griffin's like a yo-yo. Like, it, you know, and Bear Alexander at USC, 7 different schools. You know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of a couple of years ago when I started seeing high school basketball players who played at 4 and 5 and 6 different high schools. And I went, this is insane. And I'm gathering that this generation of college athletes learned this behavior in youth sports and club sports, and they're just going, eh, this is what we do.
Well, and there's the additional factor now of the money. Like, I would have to imagine, and I don't understand the system at all. So, like, if he's going into the transfer portal, it's not like a lottery. It's not like he just goes in to see, hey, let's see how I fare, you know, on the market. He goes in because, you know, as you pointed out, this comes right at the close of, you know, spring football practice, right? And there has to be conversations that have already taken place.
Oh, of course.
Where he has assurances that there is at least one or two schools, coaches, collectives out there who are saying, hey, come on over. And who might those be, you know, besides Jonathan Smith at Michigan State?
Well, the conversations, you're not supposed to have those conversations. But the conversations are happening.
Those conversations are happening.
They're happening, and they're not happening in the spring. They're happening year-round. And, you know, I have talked with people who say that Jordan Pope at Oregon State was in contact with handlers and agents throughout the Oregon State men's basketball season. I don't know that to be true, but people I trust say that this is happening, and it happened with Jordan Pope, and it happened with other players. Nobody leaves a secure situation, particularly if you're getting $400,000. Nobody in their right mind is leaving that unless they know they have a better offer out there or they're really not happy. Now, at Oregon State, just so people know, like, you're on a new spring term that just started last week, you know, so that Damon Martinez has a choice. Like, if he's going to continue to stay at Oregon State, he needs to, you know, he's going to school right now. And so he has apparently decided today he's not going to school. And it appears that it came at some surprise to his teammates. Here's Jam Griffin at practice today. He was asked about he and Damian Martinez in the backfield together. Okay. Damian Martinez was not at practice and apparently is no longer at Oregon State.
How do you view your role? I know you and Dame are pretty tight, but like kind of just easing back into where you left?
Yeah, dynamic duo type deal. Yeah.
If it's a dynamic duo, who is he and who are you?
As far as what?
I don't know. You tell me.
Batman, Robin type deal.
Who's Batman?
Nah, I'm Superman, Batman type deal.
Okay. So two alpha male.
For sure.
All right, there's Jam Griffin, who, by the way, has transferred one, two, three, this third or fourth time. I don't know. I'm not faulting any of the kids for exploiting the system, but I am wondering how crazy it must feel to them, or does it? Like, maybe it just doesn't. Maybe this is just what, you know, they...
No, I mean, if they've come up through high school switching from one club team to another, as we've seen young athletes do, then this is just a continuation of, you know, that behavior, that pattern.
I think it's, you know, potentially a turnoff to fans. I am worried about, like, the psyche of Washington State and Oregon State fans, of course. But I'm thinking just fans in general. Like, even Oregon fans who are going, like, excited about going to the Big Ten. Like, you're not immune from the portal yourself. You are in a better situation. You're not going to lose players because of uncertainty or the lack of exposure. But you certainly are at a constant risk. It has to be exhausting for coaching staffs. Can you imagine the coaching staffs that used to be able to go, hey, this is recruiting season. Now this is the off season. I'm going to go somewhere with my family and put my phone away. You can't do that. You can't, like, you cannot let your guard down at any point. You've got to be recruiting 24/7. It has to change the way you coach. I can't imagine you being able to really coach players and really have conversations with them. Bruce Barnum, the Portland State coach, came on the show earlier, an hour ago. He said he's okay if you get in the portal, but he has rules. If you get in the portal and you want to come back, you don't have a scholarship when you come back, and you have to have a unanimous team vote that says you can come back. It's like Squid Game. Like, you are gone from the game, and so there's a real finality to it. And I think, you know, more and more coaches have to do it and should do it. I did talk with Scott Ruick, the Oregon State coach, briefly, as he's, you know, he's busy trying to hold this roster together. And, you know, he had nothing but good things to say about Talia Von Ohlhofen and Tamia Gardner. I mean, he loves those kids. He coached them. He recruited them. He loves them. And, you know, obviously they have to do what's best for themselves. But I think he along with others would prefer that they stay in the program and prefer that they, you know, be with the program. But, you know, he's, you know, in a position where as a coach, you don't want to be like, how dare you? You shouldn't leave. You betrayed me. By the way, 1,100 Division I women's basketball players in the portal. It's a lot of betrayal going on out there, if we want to call it betrayal.
And to Barnum's point, he has a running back, Joby Mallory, in the portal right now. He kind of alluded to him. 12 touchdowns last season, 676 yards. He hasn't signed anywhere yet. Now, you look at his Twitter page, and he's got some, you know, interest from Western Kentucky and a couple other schools like that. But I think to Barnum's, like your point and Barnum's point, like, if he wants to come back, like, sure.
I know Joby. He should have stayed at Portland State. He was doing a good thing there.
Who knows? Maybe he has to go back to Portland State and just says, hey, sorry, Bruce.
I like Joby. I know Joby. Joby wants to be a firefighter after he is done with football. He's made some good connections with people with, Tualatin Valley Fire District. And I think Joby should have stayed at Portland State where he would have been a star. I don't know if I don't see him at like a bigger school, and but I don't know who's in his ear, and I don't know if he's just looking around going, hey, everyone else is in the portal, I got to get in the portal.
I think it is a generational thing, because I remember when I was in college, and I mean, I'm 37, like I'm older than this generation, but like my dad asked me, like, do you imagine yourself working at one place your entire life? Because he did. He worked at the city of Portland Water Bureau his whole life, and I said no, like I could not even imagine that. And he said, I couldn't imagine like changing jobs. And so I can't even imagine now like what kids are thinking nowadays of, yeah, can you think that you're going to stay at a school for 4 years? How weird would that be? Like, of course I'm going to leave and go somewhere else if I don't like it. So I think it's a little bit of everything, but the generational part is a big part of it.
Here's the thing, though, too. Barnum said something about the running back wide receiver position, that there's so much depth in the portal at that position that he would not advise people at that position to get into the portal. So there's the silver lining if you're Oregon State. There's some reps, there's some carries available to either somebody on your roster or to somebody in the portal that you have to go find. And you've got Jam Griffin, who you know can play, who's in that backfield. Now, there's no Batman and Robin, there's no dynamic duo. Jam Griffin thought he had Damian Martinez there, but it just goes to show you, like, even teammates are not cluing each other in on the day that they're leaving the team. Like, it's just a little nutty to me.
Yeah, I think it's just the new way. Like, I think we really quickly have to pivot because everyone else is doing it, and we have to shift our mentality where it's like the way that things have been done for so long is simply not how it's being done now. What complicates things for me, I think, is that the marketing programs at these universities, for example, University of Oregon, Oregon State to some extent, they're holding up these players as almost like gods a little bit, the way that they showcase them. And so as a fan, you get really kind of almost emotionally attached to, like, that's our guy. Like, you hear when people, you know, talk about, like, Dan Lanning, like, that's my coach. Like, they say it with a sense of pride. You feel connected to that person. And then what?
Poof.
You know, poof. Yeah. Right. Well, and so I think you will learn as a fan to, like, not attach yourself that much. You won't put as much of your heart into
even the coach. But coaches have done that historically, and the fan base will revolt. We're now seeing this is new. Players are doing it.
Well, Damian did that earlier. I mean, he basically said, like, yeah, I'm staying at Oregon State. Why would I leave? He put out the snake emoji in the grass.
Yep. 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 Yep.
Well, something better must have come along.
Yeah. Something ate a snake, I don't know.
I'm dying to know where he's going to wind up now.
Here's Damian Martinez talking about staying at Oregon State.
I kind of found out, like, the whole head coach thing same time he knew I was staying, I guess, because he asked me if he'd be the head coach if I stay. So, yeah, I mean, I told him I'm here. I mean, you know, I was going to be here either way, so... He found that I was staying. I found that he was head coach. I think it was just really a real connection. I mean, like I said, he wants to keep this place going. I want to keep this place going, keep the culture up, and just reach that college football playoff. So that's really the goal we want to keep going to, and that's what we're going to do.
Now, I think it's we've gotten accustomed to watching coaches who are much better trained liars than players. We've gotten accustomed to coaches leaning on semantics and leaning on, you know, hey, well, I never quite said I was staying, or I never quite said I was out.
And my agent best be out there doing his job.
Yeah, we, you know, We've gotten used to that.
I never said I'm looking. Yeah, my agent's out there looking. I'm not, though.
Yeah.
And he better be.
We're excited about the Vegas Bowl, baby. Another ball game. Got a chance to get 8 wins, and our guys are really, really excited about it. We had 3 really good practices, and I was really impressed with the way our guys been practicing. And I know they'll be ready for this ball game.
There you go.
I've gone through it quite yet, at least not since I've been over here, so I couldn't tell you. I know that we have an awesome thing going. We've got an unbelievable class going, and I think that when people speculate and start putting rumors out there, a lot of times people try to take that and get it to fit their narrative, which is try to affect recruiting class at Oregon, try to spin a story, okay? And like I said earlier, like I said right now, and like I'll say tomorrow, I've been honest with you. I'll continue being honest with you. Things are being worked out, and I have full trust in the administration here that things are going to be worked out and that I'll be coaching here. So that's where it's at.
There's Mario Cristobal, and 1 year later, Mario Cristobal introduced at the University of Miami as the new head coach. I'm just saying, I think what part of what we're watching with the portal and part of the jarring nature of it is, yeah, we're seeing players do it, and we haven't seen players do it like this before. But I also think the players aren't as savvy about not saying one way or another whether they're committed or I am committed, or, you know, they don't have the I'm excited about the Vegas Bowl thing down yet. They will. They'll get it down.
Oh, they'll learn that real quick.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm happy where I am is going to be a thing. But it's not yet. It's now, you know, oh, that snake left us. I'm here to rebuild and be part of it. Talia von Olhoffen saying, the grass isn't greener. The grass is greener where you water it. Now I'm getting in the portal. You know, it's just, I think the athletes, they're just not as experienced with it yet. And that's part of what I think is going to cause some bad feelings.
Sounds like a business opportunity for you, John.
Yeah, I don't think so. Consulting. Leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth.
Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Five at five coming up top of the hour. Punch It Audio in the 5 o'clock hour as well. Gosh, this show is flying by. I'm having too much fun, I guarantee you. We're going to for sure talk about, in the 5 at 5, the ratings, I think, for the men's and women's tournaments. I don't know what Anna has in the 5 at 5, but I'll bet you it does. It does make it. Caitlin Clark won her second consecutive Wooden Award. She was named the winner of the John Wooden Award. Second time she's got it for the most outstanding player in women's college basketball. Paige Beckers, Cameron Brink, Juju Watkins, Hannah Hidalgo were all finalists. Clark, of course, I think was the no-brainer there. How much do you think? Because the ratings, the interest in the tournament, women's college basketball, how much of it had to do with Caitlin Clark? How much of it goes away next season without her in college basketball?
I think they can still capitalize on the momentum. I think there will be new people that come up. I don't think that in a year people will forget how fun it was to watch her play and kind of the rivalry, but I think you do need another storyline. I think that's what made it interesting. Like, when I think of the men's tournament, I think a lot of people were like me, where it's like we couldn't really name the key players that were heading into the championship or even, you know, the Final Four, but I think a lot of people knew who Caitlin Clark was. I think a lot of people knew who Angel Reese was, for better or worse, because of the controversy around her.
Yeah, it started last season.
Yeah, it was 2 years of momentum.
Yeah.
It started with Angel Reese pointing to her ring, waving, I can't see you. Right. And then the next day of radio, I remember we came on the air that Monday, and it was all we could talk about and divided the audience. Like, it polarized people. And then what happened throughout the year? We were all waiting. You know, when South Carolina and LSU got in that little shoving match and benches cleared, it was like, okay, tournament's coming. And then the tournament arrived and we got LSU and Iowa in that regional final.
Right.
And that was a lot of fun and it was huge. And then, so, because I'm wrestling with how much of it is we are finally at a place where we can appreciate the women's game, and the women's game has improved. It has. It's got more exciting. The players have gotten better. But, or how much of it is a player like Caitlin Clark shooting at distances like Steph Curry and Damian Lillard that just kind of expand your interest? Is it what do you think made Caitlin Clark so compelling to people? How about that?
For me, we just haven't seen it in the women's game yet. Like, when Steph was doing it, first of all, he was must-watch TV as well. Like, we just had never seen someone shoot from that far out. So I think for Caitlin Clark, we hadn't seen it before from the women's game, and it drew us all in. To answer your question of, do I think it will, you know, hurt the viewership, I think it does, that she's leaving. But I also think that the floor has been raised a lot in the women's game now. I don't know that it won't hit the ceiling of what it was this year with those numbers, I don't think, but I think the floor of what it had been in the past will definitely go up, and I think it'll be more like the men's tournament where we don't necessarily pay attention to college basketball a whole bunch during the regular season, but then when the tournament comes around, it's must-watch TV. I think that's kind of where the women's game is going to be, maybe to a little lesser extent than the men's, but I think a lot higher than it used to be.
I can tell you this, too. There was no Caitlin Clark in Portland. But that Portland regional got a bunch of people.
Yeah, and I think the momentum continues. I think she can probably account for about 40% of the interest this year. I think there will be continued interest to see what happens to her in the WNBA.
You think she's worth 40% of the interest in women's college basketball?
Yes, absolutely.
I agree.
Yeah, generational player. So I don't think you necessarily need another generational player like that, but you need good storylines.
The 5 at 5 is coming up. Leave it here.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
I'm really excited to see what pops into the 5 at 5. Anna, here's my great idea for the Pac-12. You ready?
Yeah.
Pac-12 Football Media Day.
Uh-huh.
They've announced no plan yet.
Okay.
Big Ten Media Days in Indianapolis. Uh-huh. Mountain West Conference Media Days in Vegas.
Okay.
Big 12 Media Days in Vegas. They kind of dovetail with each other. If I'm Oregon State and Washington State, you can't do nothing. But you don't also want to go to Vegas and be viewed as settling into the Mountain West fold. You have to stand on your own. So here's my idea. 108 years ago in downtown Portland, at what is now Hotel Lucia. Is it Lucia? L-U-C-I-A?
Lucia. Sounds right.
Okay. Whatever that hotel is. 108 years ago, that's when the original Pac-12 was formed.
In Portland.
At that hotel. So if I'm Teresa Gold, the commissioner of the Pac-12, Football Media Day, downtown Portland, where John Canzano will be sure to attend, and all the other media in the state will be sure to attend. It works. It works for Pullman and Seattle, and it works for all the media outlets. And you have a one-off, one-day media day, mm-hmm. Pac-12 Media Day. What do you say?
No, I like it. I like it. You get maximum coverage that way because Spokane, that's an easy flight here. And an easy drive for the Corvallis folks to make to Portland. And there's significance behind
now,
it. I like that.
I'm not a taker. I'm a giver.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just giving these ideas away.
This came
free.
Up yesterday as I was talking about what I would do if I won the $1.3 billion.
Okay.
It was all about giving away, taking care of other people. I'm a giver.
Mm-hmm.
So I reached out to Teresa Gold, the Pac-12 commissioner, and I floated the idea. And she said, love this idea. Thank you. We have a small group that is talking about Media Day. I'll pass this on. Is she humoring me? Is she? Is she just going, yeah, you stay in your bald-headed lane?
She might be. It's hard to interpret from a text message, you know? So much left unsaid.
But is she
There are worse ideas, though, right?
No, that's not what I'm aiming for. I'm not. My goal when I wake up is not, hey, let me throw out some idea that isn't as bad as other ideas. You know what I mean?
It doesn't make sense to go to Vegas, though, does it?
No.
And that's where it's been the last few years.
No,
right?
You're not going to Vegas. You're not going to L.A.
Yeah, L.A. Vegas have been the two locations.
So either Oregon State, Washington State say, well, we just want to do our own media day on our own campus, which is stupid. Don't do that. You have to still position yourself as a conference. Uh-huh. You're saying you're a conference.
Right.
Act like a conference. Okay? Put a logo out. Put a little rice pilaf and a chicken breast in a chafing pan. Invite Steven. You know, invite all the media from the state. You know, say, here's Washington State's offensive coordinator. Here's their quarterback, you know, and have yourself a media day.
Chickens involved, I'm in.
From a branding standpoint, they don't and shouldn't change anything right now.
Yeah, but they have to get out of Vegas. Don't go to Vegas with two teams.
I mean, as far as branding themselves as the Pac-12, I mean, there's nothing wrong with them keeping the logo and the branding. It is... I mean, it's equally as ridiculous as the Big Ten saying that they're the Big Ten, right? Because, like, how many teams are in that now? I've lost count. The numbers don't even mean anything
anymore. They don't mean anything.
Well, so why not stay consistent with the branding and the logo?
18 in the Big Ten, 16 in the SEC.
Right. And nobody over there is talking about changing how they refer to themselves or their logo.
No, the Pac-12 is not going to change any of that. They that's intellectual property.
Yeah.
But you said don't change anything. I meant you go back to Vegas and try to hold media day at the club at Resorts World?
Yeah, no.
No.
Doesn't
you don't
make sense.
Do that. It doesn't make any sense. But you could sell everybody on, we're going back to our roots.
Right.
108 years ago, this conference was born. It grew into the Conference of Champions. We're going right back to downtown Portland. Pac-12 Media Day, July, whatever, whatever. And the keynote speaker will be Canzano because this was his idea.
You're right.
How about that? All right, let's play the 5 at 5.
The 5 at 5. Number 1.
Tiger Woods battling his limitations at the Masters, but he still believes he has one more in him. His health was a main subject in the news conference today at Augusta. He's saying that his surgically fused right ankle is no longer an issue, but the rest of his body, from his other ankle to his back, are having to compensate. He says he hurts every day. Every shot that's not on the tee box is a challenge. But he says he loves golf. He loves to compete. He'll be trying to break a record that he currently shares with former champions Gary Player and Fred Couples by making the cut for the 24th consecutive time. Is he going to do it?
I won't root against him. You know, there's times I've rooted against him and times I've rooted for him. I'm in a for him mood when it comes to Tiger because he is now... in this position where, you know, he looks like a lot of us on the golf course. He's hobbling around. He's hitting the ball not so perfect.
It's relatable.
You know, he's more relatable and easier to root for. I'll root for him in this, you know, and I haven't looked at the odds. Steven, have you looked at the odds for Tiger to win the Masters?
I want to say it's like 150-1. Like, it's a real long shot.
You'd be, it's a bad bet, right?
Horrible bet, yeah.
But a fun one.
Like, have you made worse bets than that?
I've made worse bets, that's for sure.
Said he played great.
But can he walk, though? Like, walking. He has a hard time walking. That's important in golf.
So, if you're starting our conversation about whether or not it's a bad bet with can he walk, I think it's a bad bet.
That would be my argument against the bet, John. If you're going to make the bet, I'd say, well, can he walk? Like, that's my thing.
How about Rory McIlroy?
How about Rory?
What would you do there? Because some people are saying Rory is a good bet here. He's 11-1 to win the event. But are you just lighting money on fire betting on Rory McIlroy at this point as well?
No, I mean, he's got a chance. He's right up there. He's always one of the best. I feel like you're right. Like, yeah. I wouldn't bet on him either. I think... when Scottie Scheffler's been on fire, like, he's always really good. I'd go John Rahm.
Yeah. There's a bet on the board, Tiger versus Phil. Phil Mickelson or Tiger Woods? It's really difficult.
There must be some money coming in on Tiger. He's now 140-1 instead of 150. So a lot of hot money coming in on him.
I think Mickelson will outplay Woods, but it will be close.
Number two.
Well, this is fascinating. So the NCAA Women's National Championship between South Carolina and Iowa on Sunday drew significantly more viewers than the men's championship between Connecticut and Purdue last night. Was that just last night? Why does that feel like so long ago? Oh, my goodness. So the final score, Iowa-South Carolina, 18.9 million viewers, according to Nielsen. They're the people that study this stuff. Purdue, Connecticut, UConn, 14.8 million. Now, you can point to all the things, right? All the things, a more favorable time slot, more entertaining game, but the facts stand. And it's a first.
Do you think everyone is kind of saying, don't judge the men's ratings and the women's ratings in the same breath? And I hear a lot of people saying, nothing against the men's game, but this was great for the women's game, right? Can we just say viewership in general of these two events was just sky high? And, you know, like, do you have to use the men's viewership to make the women's viewership mean more?
No, I'm just enjoying pointing out that the women's game actually drew like millions more viewers than the men's.
You're kind of gloating.
What's wrong with that?
Are women gloating right now?
They're gloating a little. It's okay.
Here's another question I have on the on that front. What do you do? What do you make of the WNBA players who are criticizing Caitlin Clark and criticizing her entry into the WNBA? And is it about jealousy? Is it about, hey, they didn't get the spotlight themselves? Or is it about the brands of the college teams are bigger than the WNBA teams and they still feel like they're in the dark a little bit? Or what is it about?
I mean, I think it's a combination of all those things, but I think it's really unwise for them to do this. Like, it's unwise for them to be criticizing Caitlin Clark and saying all these things like, oh, she's going to have a comeuppance once she comes to the NBA or WNBA. Because, like, why would you criticize the person that is drawing more attention to your sport than any other time in the sport's history? That's just short-sighted.
But won't it make you want to watch that game when Diana Taurasi goes against Caitlin Clark?
Well, of course it will. Of course it will. Yes. So maybe, I don't know.
It's the Angel Reese Caitlin Clark thing.
Do you think this is all part of a scheme or a strategy? I don't think it is. I don't think, like they all got together and said, okay, let's drive ratings and interest by trashing her before she actually comes into the league. I don't know.
But part of me wants to believe that they are, they're just jealous that they didn't get the spotlight.
Maybe there's some of that.
Diana Taurasi, Rebecca Lobo, you know, that whole group is just going, that should have been us back in the day. And there's just a little bit of that there. But then the other part of it is, you know, as it has been pointed out by multiple players, there are grown women in the WNBA who have played professional basketball for 8 or 10 years who are really good.
Yeah.
That nobody knows about.
Sure.
You know, and maybe Caitlin Clark going to the WNBA is going to cause a bunch of people who are interested in Caitlin Clark to watch them and go, wow, there are some other great players on planet Earth.
She's going to lift them all up. I mean, nobody said it better than Dawn Staley, who went against her for that championship game on Sunday, who is basically like, thank you, Caitlin Clark, for raising everyone's awareness of women's basketball.
Number three.
John Morant, according to a judge, acted in self-defense when he punched that teenager at his pickup basketball game at his house in July of 2022. So he was granted the presumption of civil immunity under Tennessee's self-defense immunity statute. Basically, the judge says he's not going to face a criminal conviction here because he was defending himself in the process of that punch, which turns out, according to the witness, was more of a chin check, not a hard hit at all. So he skates and he will sell more shoes.
Well, it doesn't solve the problem. I think there's a general issue right now until there's not an issue. And, you know, as once upon a time we had a psychologist come on the show and talk about Blazers players of the past who had had issues. Okay, there was just a number of Blazers players who had just been chronically in trouble and involved a driver's license or a plaid pantry or a pit bull or a ornament signing party. And, you know, players just would show up at media day and they'd say, you know, I've turned over a new leaf. And so we had a psychologist come on the show and I say, is it possible for a player to go off to the Bahamas for 2 weeks in the summer in the off season, you work out, come back for a new season and be a different person? And she said, the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. So that's what John Morant's up against. He's got, you know, there's some stuff in his file right now. And he needs to have a really clean year where he's playing basketball and
not flashing guns on social media.
Not flashing guns and not punching people at pickup games. That's my take on Ja at this point of Ja's career.
Number four.
I haven't read that much about this guy, but now I'm intrigued, and I think there's going to be a Netflix special done about him. Xavier Babadar, known as Chiefsaholic. He's the Kansas City Chiefs super fan who was already facing a 50-year prison sentence after pleading guilty to several bank robberies. Well, now an Oklahoma judge has ordered him to pay almost $11 million to a former bank teller that he threatened at gunpoint during one of those robberies. This guy is just a fascinating story. So, obviously, he's going to have a hard time paying back this restitution. He's also being forced to surrender a signed painting of Patrick Mahomes that was covered by the FBI. They're trying to make sure that he's never able to profit from stealing more than $800,000 and laundering that through a string of casinos.
Yeah. He made some really bad strategic decisions. Can I play the cut we have from his attorney?
Sure.
His attorney came out of court. This is in late February, addressing the media. It was a spectacle before the attorney opened his mouth.
From the beginning of this case, folks, the government has been blitzing, and Xavier's pocket was collapsing. But today, Xavier stepped into the pressure. He took responsibility for his actions. He stood up in court, humble and repentant, and admitted what he had done. Now, if I know anything about Xavier, and if the Chiefs Kingdom knows anything about Chiefsaholic, we know that he doesn't give up. We know that if he stumbled and he fell, he didn't let his knee touch the ground. And that's because he's capable of doing a great thing. And he knows that there's still hope. We still have a lot of work to do on his case, but Xavier wants everyone to know that he loves the Chiefs Kingdom, he loves Kansas City, and he hopes that you'll rally to his support. Thank you and God bless.
Every sports cliche he could get in there.
That guy has a law degree and said those things?
Apparently.
So for anyone who doesn't know, this guy, this nutbag, got famous after attending Chiefs games in a wolf costume. While he was this avid fan of the team, he spent time robbing banks, like terrifying tellers, when he wasn't attending games. He was arrested, released on bail, and then he placed several bets in an attempt to launder the money. He placed a 5,000 bet $5,000 bet on Mahomes to win Super Bowl MVP, as well as the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl in 2023. Both came to fruition. As a result, the casino mailed him a check for $100,000. After he got the check, he cut off his ankle monitor, skipped his arraignment, and went on the run. He ended up using his winnings to buy a car in Nevada, rob two more banks, before finally getting arrested in Sacktown, California.
Yeah, it ain't going to work for him. You know, that whole thing reminds me of Goodwill Hunting, where Ben Affleck's character, Chucky, is in there negotiating on behalf of Matt Damon.
Yeah.
And he's got the blue suit on. He's talking, and the people have offered, Matt Damon's character a job already, and Chucky's like, well, this is not my first time in such altercations, and let me say, we can do this the easy way or the hard way. And he's looking for a retainer the whole time. This is just, it's funny until it's not, because what's he going to get? 50 years?
He's facing 50 years. Yeah.
Was that number four or five?
That was four.
I can't remember.
That was four.
I was so into that.
Yeah.
Number five.
We're going to end on Stephen's favorite athlete family, Jason Kelce. Maybe his retirement's not going to last very long. Remember when I said that he would be potentially joining WrestleMania 40 in Philadelphia?
Yes.
He did. I didn't really follow up on that, but he did. He and his former teammate, Lane Johnson, showed up, sprang into action on the mat. Apparently, you can just go into wrestling from football and, you know, not really have much of an issue with that. So, since he crushed it and the audience was so excited, like, they sprang into action and then it was like this surprise reveal about who they actually were and the crowd went wild. And I guess he's mulling over the opportunity to continue now his career with the WWE.
Steven, you're going to be okay with this?
I guess. I mean, because, yeah, I mean, now that I think about it, I'll be okay because I don't watch wrestling, so he can go to all the wrestling fans. I know my brother watched WrestleMania, and his wife's a big Jason Kelce fan, so they were excited about it.
I think the WWE is smart. They're always looking to siphon and draft off of popularity and momentum, and that's frankly all they're doing here. That is the 5 at 5. Here's one thing we've been thinking about. I want to throw this out there. Steven, I want to play a little game called Good Idea or Bad Idea, okay? Thumbs up or thumbs down. Let's start with my idea. Pac-12 Media Day in downtown Portland. Let's just start with that. Good idea or bad idea?
I would say good idea because it's closer to us, and I think that would be a lot of fun for selfishly for me and for you. It'd be a lot closer to it. So I think, yeah, and I think it's like you guys said, the history of the Pac-12, now it's the Pac-2. I think it's kind of a good meeting spot for these two, and it would put all the attention on those two schools. And if they want to be relevant again, they got to act like they're big-time schools. So, yeah, I think it's good.
Sometimes I will float ideas that I think might be coming down the pipeline just to see what people's reaction are to them. But this one, that's not how this came up. This was literally me sitting with Anna, and I went, you know, they ought to hold Media Day in downtown Portland. That's an original idea. I think I should put that out there. How about it? And then I kind of bounced it off a couple people. The first person was Teresa Gold, the Pac-12 commissioner. And she said,
she was your guinea pig?
Yeah, she was my guinea pig.
She was your one-person focus group?
But as I told her, I said, listen, you know, a lot of people, you know, I don't just reach out to people when I need something. That's the key. Mm-hmm. Building a rapport with a source. You don't just reach out when you need something. You got to give to a little bit. So I gave her the answer to all their problems as it pertains to Media Day.
Yes.
And now?
So humble.
Yes.
It's that easy.
I got a little bit of humility over here.
I was going to say
humidity. Humility
all
over
I
here.
All I did was solve all of the problems.
Yeah. Got to fix this thing. All right. Second thing. I forgot where I was going with my other idea.
There was another one.
There was a better idea. That was just the setup. And then the real idea was coming. Okay, good idea or bad idea, Stephen. Steven, is it a good idea or bad idea for Oregon State fans to attach their hopes to this next football season? Meaning, we talked with Angie Machado earlier in the show. She said 9 or 10 wins. That's what it has to be because they need the momentum. Good idea or bad idea to put your eggs in that basket?
I'm going to go bad idea. I think 9 or 10 wins is a little delusional from Angie Machado there. I don't know how Oregon State's going to get to that many wins with the losses that they've had with a first-year head coach, first-year coordinators. Like, I am a little bit more down on Oregon State than I think a lot of people are. So I think just expect 9, 10 wins. I think that's a little wild in my mind. And I think you have to stay relevant, yes, but I don't know that necessarily it's just this one-year process. And I think that next year is not the year to go all in and say, we need to get 10 wins or else it's busted. Because I think if that's your thought process, you're just going to be busted.
Yeah, I think it's been a pretty rough off season for a lot of Oregon State fans, Washington State fans. Kyle Smith leaves. Jonathan Smith leaves. Damian Martinez leaves. Cam Ward leaves.
Aiden, I think it's Child.
Just been brutal. Aiden Child. It's been brutal for those programs. The women's basketball program at Oregon State has lost two players in the portal, two key players. But I think it in a weird way, the vantage point that we all have watching this, I'm eager to see kind of what Oregon State and Washington State do. I'm also kind of simultaneously watching Oregon. I feel like we're on the other side of this two-way mirror. And we're watching these subjects on a sociological experiment going, okay, what's Oregon going to do with 50% distribution going into the Big Ten? Washington, too. Washington's another thing. What is Washington going to do next year? What's UCLA going to do in the Big Ten? I think that's all going to be interesting. All right, leave it here. We got Punch It Audio coming up. You got the BFT.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
I have no beefs with anybody right now. I really don't. I don't have a beef with the Big Ten, the SEC, the Pac-12. I don't have any beefs. It's almost like amnesty right now. We're at that point of the sports calendar where there's amnesty. We've got the Masters this week, the Final Four in the rearview mirror. I thought, in general, the NCAA tournaments delivered. The early round games were compelling. Watching Kentucky get beat was very interesting and exciting in the early part of the tournament. That kind of made the early part of the men's tournament. The women's tournament won the day, won the month, so to speak. The ratings proved it. I thought it delivered in every way. And I said this when we watched Iowa play LSU. There's a buildup to major sporting events. I don't quite think there's anything else like it. Maybe in great theater, like Broadway shows on opening night, maybe where there's a big buildup and maybe there's a headliner who's part of the Broadway show. And so the anticipation, the reviews, the excitement's all there. And then there's opening night. And then the actors have, the lights are on. You have to perform. I felt like the NCAA tournament, and in particular, the women's tournament, had all this buildup, all this anticipation. And then the lights went on and damn it, it performed. Like, the event met the moment. The stage was not too big for the play, to steal a theater saying. So I thought it was just one of those rare occasions when, like, I don't really have a beef. I don't think anybody could have a beef with how that went down. Last year, we had a beef at the end of this thing. We had Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark, and we were divided on it. And people were going, you know, why is it okay for the men to trash talk and not the women? Or they were saying, you know, what Angel Reese did was classless, or what Caitlin Clark did was classless, or, you know, it was just everybody was all over the place. But I digress. I am not having beef with anyone right now, and we're going to play Punch It Audio and see what happens.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth Headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
Let's start in the final seconds of last night's national championship game. Dan Hurley on the court. Here's his team dribbling it out. Punch it.
What an amazing run. It is a UConn coronation. The Huskies make history. Back-to-back national champions. Number one lives up to the billing. They defeat Purdue 75-60. They've done it again.
There it was. Dan Hurley afterwards.
Yo, UConn's been running for the last 25, 30 years. UConn's been running college basketball. And I see all the former champs over there. And we've been running college basketball the last 30 years. Let's go.
Wow. The last 30 years? I don't know about that. But great run in this last 2 years by Dan Hurley's program. He's got relentless talent, players that play the right way, play hard on both ends of the court. Fun to watch. Really put a lot of pressure on Purdue and Zach Edey last night. I felt bad for the Boiler fans. Here's Zach Edey afterwards. Punch it.
I think for me, the big thing is you can say whatever you want about me. You can say however I play. You can say whatever. But you can never say that I didn't give it my 100% every single time I stepped on the floor, every single time I went in practice. And that's what I always hang my hat on. I came in. And I never didn't give it 100%.
Purdue big man dropped 37 points. UConn went back-to-back, won the game 75-60. After the game, Draymond Green got on social media, basically pointing out that Samson Johnson of UConn did a nice job on Zach Edey. Job well done, 35-35, Samson Johnson. You did your job tonight. It was him that made Edey quit with about 19 minutes to go in the second half. There was a turnover. I saw Edey's body language walking back. He was done. Draymond Green. Now, I said entering this segment, I didn't have a beef. I have a beef with that. I think players are allowed to show frustration without saying that they quit. UConn was relentless. Zach Edey had a lot on his shoulders. Scored 37 points, but he needed some of those Purdue backcourt players to hit threes, and it just didn't happen. I looked up at halftime. Purdue was 1-for-2 from three-point range. UConn had attempted 9 threes in the first half, and I thought, gosh, if Purdue doesn't start shooting and making threes, Zach Edey's going to be in trouble. Draymond Green says he quit, Stephen. Do you agree with that?
No, not at all. Zach Edey was the only good part about Purdue last night. The rest of the team made 9 shots, I believe. I think they were like 9-for-28 shooting besides Zach Edey. So, like, yeah, Zach Edey got exposed in certain situations, and I think you can look at Dan Hurley really exposing them. But I think a lot of it has to go on Matt Painter. Like, for Purdue to only shoot 7 threes, I believe, 7 or 8 threes in the entire game, like, what's the game plan there? You really expect you're going to go beat UConn, who has won so many games in a row by so many points, and you're not going to shoot three-pointers? You made one all night? Like, that's on Matt Painter and their game plan. And I understand UConn did a good job of forcing one-on-one coverage to Zach Edey, let him kind of do what he wanted to do. But Matt Painter's got to figure something else out. And I think Draymond's out of line for saying he gave up and quit. The dude had 35 and, like, 15 in a national title game. Like, come on, man. He was out there balling. He was out there giving it his all.
Jay Billis talking about Zach Edey and his potential as an NBA player.
Punch. Well, he's going to play in the NBA, and as long as he stays healthy, he'll play for a long time. He's only been playing organized basketball for 7 years. You know, he's from Toronto, Ontario, grew up playing hockey and baseball, and obviously when you're as big as he is, basketball is going to be a part of your life. But he has, you could argue, Rich, that he's the most improved player from last year to this year as the National Player of the Year. And the numbers he put up this year, I don't remember him even having a bad game. He might have had a game where it wasn't up to his standard, but he hadn't had a bad one. And he's the most impactful player in America on the college level. And I think not only is there a place for him in the NBA, there's a significant place.
I think there's a place for him, but I do think we saw some potential problems with his mobility. He is raw in some areas. He was exploited by more athletic players that with better feet. But when you're 7'4", yeah, you can do one or two things really well. You can play in the NBA. Steven, Zach Edey is an NBA player. Is there a team that would have him playing 7 to 12 minutes a game?
I think so, and I think it helps a lot also that the draft isn't great this year, John. Like, it's not known to be a very good draft, so I think Zach Edey will probably be a first-round pick. But I disagree with Billis. I think there's a real chance that he flames out in the NBA and really just can't play because the way he guards, and we saw that last night, Dan Hurley pick and rolled him to death because all he could do was the drop coverage, stand kind of right underneath the hoop, and it gave him wide open floaters. And then when he got when he stepped out just one or two steps, they got other slips from other players, and they're getting wide open dunks on top of him. So that is going to be a problem with Zach Edey going forward, is how does he guard in the NBA? But the guy can finish inside, and I think for a 5-6 minute stretch, maybe you just need to change some things up, and you go with the big 7'4" mountain of a man out there. He can get you 10 quick points. I think there's a spot for him in the NBA.
John Calipari heading to Arkansas from Kentucky. He had a message for the Kentucky fans. Punch it.
This is a dream job. It was my dream job. Anybody in our profession looks at the University of Kentucky in basketball and said, that is the bluest of blue. The last few weeks, we've come to realize that this program probably needs to hear another voice, that the university as a whole has to have another voice giving guidance about this program that they hear. And the fans need to hear another voice. We've loved it here, but we think it's time for us to step away and step away completely from the program.
Step away from the program and compete against the program. Calipari's right in that there's a season for all things. I have long believed that there's kind of a season for things as it pertains to coaching. Terry Stotts was the Blazers coach, and I kind of felt that had run its course. Mike Riley at Oregon State, he was there for a long time, and it kind of plateaued. It had run its course. I think there are seasons for all things, and I think Calipari's right in that, you know, a program needs another voice, or maybe he just needs a change of scenery, whatever you want to say it. I think this is one of those things, like people keep saying it works for both sides. We don't know yet if it works for Kentucky, depending on what their next coach does. And we don't know if it works for Cal at Arkansas, depending on what he does. But staying at Kentucky felt stale. And their performance in the last four seasons, just not enough to build on. Dan Lanning envisions a certain kind of relationship between his quarterbacks, Dylan Gabriel, Dante Moore. They're competing for reps. Here's Oregon's coach. Punch it.
I want when they're on the field, they're cheering for the other guy, right? But I want to see that competition continue to show up, right? They're the field general when they're out there on the field, right? Take charge, right? Learn off of each other's mistakes and success, right? That's something you want to see from every one of your positions is when you're on the field, are you getting better, right? When you're not on the field, are you learning from somebody else?
I like it. You want to foster that competition, but you want it to be a healthy competition. You don't need these guys to hate each other. It doesn't need to be personal. But everybody needs to be rowing in the same direction. I like it. I like what Dan Lanning's selling. I think he's got two good quarterbacks, and I think he has an interesting blend or an interesting mix in general in that room. Meanwhile, Mateo Uiagalelei, defensive end at Oregon, has set some goals for next season. What are the goals? Well, I'll let Mateo tell you. Punch it.
I don't know if I have like a number on like any stats, but I definitely want to get like as many sacks as I can for like that stuff. But I think what's more important is just by every play, kind of every practice, the whole OB room, we watch film, you know, just make sure every play, like, we go in 100% every play. There ain't no slowing down. I feel like if you focus on that, it's going to lead to production.
Focus on that, lead to production. I love it. I also think that Oregon is lucky to have so much depth, so many good players. And Mateo Uiagalelei is going to have a lot of talent around him. Given that his brother DJ was so heralded as a recruit out of high school, I find it interesting and intriguing that there's a possibility here that Mateo ends up being a far better NFL prospect. Keep an eye on it. DJ off to Florida State after being at Clemson, then Oregon State. Mateo back for another year at Oregon. Let's go to Major League Baseball, where balls are flying. Giancarlo Stanton, punch it.
And the pitch hit in the air to deep left. It is high. It is far. It is gone. It's a grand slam. Non dimentica. That ball sure traveled far. Giancarlo, he hits a grand slam deep in the left field seats. And the Yankees take a 5-1 lead.
Yankees with a 5-1 lead. John Sterling on the call. Love a John Sterling call. Ellie De La Cruz with a home run himself. Here's Reds Television on the call. Sounded a little different because it was an inside the park job. Line drive into center field. Gets by the center fielder, turns into a track meet. Punch
salute.
It.
Bomb. First pitch, center field. Frelick was deep coming on. He slides, it gets by. De La Cruz can fly. He storms to second. Churio gathers into the track. Windmill is on. Relay to the plate. De La Cruz! Save!
Pretty darn exciting. Also exciting. The first home run for Young Hoo Lee with the Giants. This one coming in Korean. Punch it.
네. 볼 수밖에 없거든요. 자, 자, 자. 오른쪽, 이정호. 오른쪽, 오른쪽, 이정호. 벽장에 넘어갑니다. 이정호!
이정호가 했습니다! 자, 빨치를 쳐야 돼요, 사기. 아, 이정호!
KBO 리그 최고의 타자가 메이저리그에
와, 코스그룹은 칠만하다고 그랬잖아요. 이제. 바로 넘기네요.
이정호의 손오퍼.
아, 소름 돋아요.
I loved at his introductory news conference before, as he was introducing himself to the media in English, he asked, do I look handsome in my uniform? That has never been said. Great stuff. Love the crack of the bat. Love a good home run call. More to come. Leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth.
Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Well, we played a John Sterling cut in the last segment, which gets my wheels turning. You know, as it pertains to baseball, what makes a great home run call? Steven, in your mind, what makes a great home run call?
Honestly, for me, like, it's just the pure emotion. And that goes for a lot of things, like music and stuff for me. Like, I don't care if you're a good singer. Like, if I can feel the emotion, feel that you actually care, that's what makes a good call. And I feel like with John Sterling, like, he's not everyone's cup of tea, but, like, he's having fun. And you can tell, like, he's into the game and he's just having a good time. Like, he loves his job. That's the same thing with, like, Vin Scully back in the day. It's like, he's just having fun telling stories, watching baseball. Like, that's all I need. All I need is just some emotion, some you know, some genuine fun authentication. That's all I want.
I want to play that call again, that John Sterling call. Maybe you can cue it up for me. Yeah, it was Giancarlo Stanton, home run. Is this today's game or was it yesterday's game?
I want to say it was either yesterday. It was yesterday or over the weekend. I got it right here.
All right, you play it, and I'm going to play some other ones.
And the pitch hit in the air to deep left. It is high. It is far. It is gone. It's a grand slam. Demente car. That ball sure traveled far. Giancarlo, he hits a grand slam deep in the left field seats. And the Yankees take a 5-1 lead.
I know he's sitting around coming up with that stuff. When it's
he had not, that in the bag. He had that in the holster.
But still good. How about this one? This is a decade ago. John Sterling on the call.
Swung on and drilled to deep right field. It is high. It is far. It is gone. Solardi hits a bullet over the right field wall and about eight rows back. Never nervous Jan Hervis. Solardi. Whoa, whoa. Solardi. Whoa, 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 whoa. He homers to deep right. And the Yankees take a 2-0 lead.
I just love that. I love that one. Great stuff as the Yankees and John Sterling go together. I remember Bill Shonley telling me years ago that he knew John Sterling. And I was thinking about Sean's in part because there was something. Obviously, there's something to the voice of your team when you're growing up. And the Blazers were not my team growing up, but they might have been your team out there listening. And Bill Shonley was your guy. But I can tell you, I was at Shonley's memorial service that he basically planned. And for people who don't know, Bill Shonley went to great lengths to sort of orchestrate how his memorial service would go. And I love the guy for it because I get it. And he wanted it a certain way. And I know that, like, even the officiant of the ceremony, the pastor who was at the front of the church that he attended, and he was part of the choir, and he would all do all the readings and all the stuff that Bill Shonley did at his church. Pastor said that in the history of the church, nobody had ever had the deceased in a coffin at the memorial service. They usually just do a memorial service, put a picture of the person up, people come up. But Bill Shonley wanted to be at his memorial. He wanted it his way. He was very particular about it. So, there's something to these voices. And Bill Shonley, certainly one of those voices. John Sterling, certainly one of those voices. Vin Scully, one of those voices. I wonder anymore. I wonder, outside of the national media members who are the voice of their sport, And in some ways, you got in the NFL people like Joe Buck and Troy Aikman. And in soccer, you got John Strong, the voice of American soccer, right? They're the voice of a sport. But the voices of teams, I'm not sure we're going to get them like we used to. I'm not sure that that connection's going to be there like it was once upon a time. So there's something there. And I was thinking about Shonley, and may he rest in peace. And the value he held in the community. So good, so good. We're back tomorrow. The Bald-Faced Truth, not here for a long time. Just a good time.